Well, hello.
Hello, everybody.
It's nice to see you all. Please come in, sit a spell. We are, as always, late to the party. I am Jake, and the head of our show.
And I am Travis Tate.
Hey, what's up, Tater?
Hey, you know, I was just thinking, that is so smooth. That's basically our theme song. We don't even need a theme song. I was thinking about it today. Maybe we need a theme song, but the that's a song.
I'll try and bring like that it. Up. We'll just talk
that way. We can just stretch it out. Hey.
Hey, everybody. Is this ASMR?
Yes. Did anybody feel the tingle?
Yeah.
If you didn't, turn it up louder. Put it somewhere else.
Turn it up louder. You'll feel the tingle. A few more times.
We're here. We're live here in the
Scenic Wise Guys.
Scenic Wise Guys green room downtown.
I said, the funny thing is, I said that in sort of a dismissive manner, but yeah, this club is very nice.
It really is. It's one of the nicest clubs in the country.
Yeah.
Every comic that comes through here just goes, wow.
Especially come from, nice. And I really like the West Valley location, but especially coming from the West Valley location, this is palatial.
Have you had a chance to watch the Gilbert Gottfried documentary on Hulu?
No.
Okay.
Had we discussed this previously?
A little bit, yeah. But we were specifically talking about Gilbert. Yeah. But there are scenes in that and also in Comedian with Jerry Seinfeld where they show green rooms.
Oh, okay.
And a lot of times it's just a storage room and there's cans of tomato sauce and jars of salsa right next to the little love seat that they're sitting on that is from the 1970s. It looks like it was in an old rundown motel, like they would use it in the TV show Supernatural. But this is actually the third incarnation of the green room here. And this one's not even completely done, but it's a nice setup. It's got its own bathroom.
There's a TV in here and everything.
It's got a kitchenette. It's got everything you could need.
Not being a comic.
And it's private.
So how much time do you spend in a green room? Like, what's the... sell me on the importance of a good green room.
The main thing about the green room is so that people that need to focus or just be away from the crowd can do that. So if I'm headlining, I'll kind of go in the green room for a few minutes and then go out and pace around. That's how I do it. I'll be pacing quite a bit.
You're going to be nervous the whole time, no matter what.
When I headline August 17th and 18th and Ogden, Utah.
Check them out, Wise people. Guys. I hear tickets are going fast.
Yeah, they're going fast. You better get in there real quick. Watch your fingers. So that's how it is for me. Some comics, they've been doing it so long, they're like, yeah, hey, you're on the show. Come on in and hang out. I always kind of like hold back on going in the green room until I get an invitation.
It's respectful.
It's kind of like letting a vampire in your house. You've been watching Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Let the Tate one in.
Right. So that's how I do it. It's definitely a matter of respect for me. If somebody's like, yeah, come in and hang out, then I might have a really fun two nights just hanging out in the green room, getting to know, a big name comic. And that's not always the case, but that's usually the case.
No, that's cool.
But sometimes they just they need a little space, or they've met enough local comics that it's maybe two times down the road when I come back we can hang out, and not all of them are into hanging out, and that's fine.
I can only imagine in any number of professions, comic book artists, writers, actors, any number of sort of entertainment things, musicians, that ones that have been doing it for a long time, that the allure of, like, most of them probably are it's kind of a job,
right?
And they want to do they don't want to soak up the local flavor. They're there to entertain people and go home.
Right.
And that seems fine. As long as they're not just being an outright dick to you.
No, that rarely ever happens.
Yeah.
Margaret Cho.
Coming for you, Cho.
For the most part, yeah, it's really cool. And it really is cool to go in the green room and just sit and hang out and just talk like a real person.
Sure.
And so you'll talk about comedy, of course. But I'll give you an example. Christina P. Her name's Christina Pajitsky. Oh, okay. She's married to Tom Segura.
Okay.
She's an awesome comic. She was here, I want to say like February, January, somewhere in there. And I was MC. And she brought Matt Fulcher on with her. And we're all 40, roughly. And we just sat in the green room and watched MTV Classic And it was so fun. We just,
that does sound fun.
It was so fun. And we were riffing on Culture Club came on, and it was Karma Chameleon video. And we were riffing on that. And then a Mariah Carey video comes on.
The Karma Chameleon, that video comes and goes.
It definitely does. But it's a blast just to sit down and be a real person with somebody that you like see on Netflix and go, wow, that's a real person.
You know, in any walk of life, I am so excited when I sit down and start, if I can kind of start riffing with someone and be like, oh, I can just hang out with this person.
And then when
it
you
is nice.
When you're able to get nostalgic with them, like, do you remember this? Or do you remember
that
Bone Thugs and Harmony comes on?
Pretty
and we're
much
all
the only thing
it.
Our show is. Like right now I am living what you're describing more or less.
So yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
But the green room mostly it's kind of an oasis from the crowds, or a place to go get something to eat so you're not eating in front of people. Or a lot of times most comics will do like a meet and greet, and it's so right after the show you got this high from doing really well, maybe you need to go in the green room for 5 to 10 minutes and just, you know, get a drink of water and just calm yourself down and then go out. Or maybe you don't like meeting people, maybe it's a phobia or a
I can tell you I struggle with that. Like, yeah, if I had to, if every time we finish this, you're like, okay, now stand and wait in line while 30 people come up to you and either try to tell you that they enjoyed you or try to tell you how much they did enjoy you, I would have a hard time with that.
Well, I think a lot of the pressure is this is their moment with you.
Yeah.
And this, they're going to remember
I've been that guy.
For the rest of their life, and they want to have that moment. And a lot of people feel the pressure to deliver on that expectation.
I have been that guy a few times, and it's the misguided desire in me that when I see specifically comics, when I see someone, I don't necessarily want to talk to them for a long time, but I want to try to impress upon them that what they do means something to me, and I don't get bummed out. I think I told you I went and saw Marc Maron. Mm-hmm. And I'd been listening to WTF a lot. This was years ago. And I'd been listening to WTF a lot at the time. And I went and saw him, and he was fine. And WTF is one of those kind of cornerstone podcasts of when I started listening to podcasts.
Right.
That was one of the very early ones that really resonated with me. And all I said to him was, you know, on the way out, I just said, hey, thank you for being you. I couldn't think of, like, I can't tell him anything that he hasn't heard. All I just want to say is, hey, thanks for being you. And he kind of dryly looked at me and said, uh-huh. And I don't begrudge him that. I don't begrudge him that. You know, it's not up to him to have a reaction to make me feel okay about it. The only thing I'm bummed out about is maybe I didn't. I don't know. It's unfair for me to think that I could impress upon someone like that. Like, oh, I mean something to this person. They,
right.
They don't have to feel that way. That's fine. But I swung for that fence.
I'll give you a couple quick Marc Maron stories. I want to say it was first, maybe second time I met him. We all, like him and me and a bunch of other comics, we went out. And my wife went too. We went out to get breakfast, basically, in the middle of the night after the shows.
Oh, okay.
So we went to the Village Inn and just sat there next to Marc Maron. This is when I was doing really good on the 5-Hour Body. And he was also doing it because he had actually met Tim Ferriss, and we were talking about that. And it was both of our cheat days, so we were both going to get pancakes, and
that'd be a good thing to bond over.
Yeah, we were digging in over some carbs. We were bonding over carbs. So, and he always remembered that. And the last time he was here, actually, I wasn't even on the show. I was just kind of helping him out because he went outside to take pictures, which is very strange.
You know, living in Utah, growing up in this area, sometimes you forget about that. It is very picturesque, like especially if you live somewhere that there's not a lot of mountains. Like every once in a while, I look around and I'm like, God, these mountains are beautiful.
I think he just needed some fresh air, to be honest with you.
Or it could be just that.
So I was out there with him. I was helping take pictures and stuff like that. I'm a big guy, so I provide a little bit of security also. And we're done taking pictures and getting ready for the next show. And we go walking come in the club. And at the time, the club had revolving doors.
That revolving door was very tiny.
It was very tiny. And both of us accidentally, because we were talking,
right.
He was turning around looking at me, talking. And I was looking at him. And we were having a conversation as we walked through. And we both walked into the same sleeve, I guess you would call it. and then realized that the lobby was full of people and we were stuck for about a minute and a half. And he just said, "So I guess this is happening now."
I remember that story. That's good. Yeah, when I saw Ron Funches recently, I shook his hand and said, "You are my favorite guest on any podcast I ever happened to catch you on." And when I left, I thought, that's maybe he would rather me just like his actual comedy. Damn it.
I mean, somebody like Ron Funches, you could like him from a TV show he was on. You could like him from a movie he was in. He's becoming a professional wrestler now. You could like him from that. Yeah, he's super into wrestling.
And yeah, I've heard he has some really good material.
Lost all that weight and he's training right now on becoming a wrestler. You could like him from podcasts.
It's unreasonable to think I would actually give, you know, leave an impression on anyone, but it would be really nice when I see these people I like. I just want them to feel like, wow, that guy really likes me.
Have you considered telling them they have nice haunches? That'll leave an impression.
I'm gonna, you know what? If and when I get to see Ron Funches again, I'm gonna tell him I like them haunches.
Ron Funches is a good guy too. My name is Ron Funches. He told me I was wearing a button-up shirt, and he goes, "That shirt looks nice on you." It's like, thanks, hey, Ron.
I hope I get to have some. Yeah.
And then we talked about wrestling for about an hour. So,
speaking of which, did you end up listening to that Brutus the Hugging Beefcake episode of Something to Wrestle?
I have it downloaded, but I haven't had a chance to listen to it yet.
It is, you know, because I've listened to a few of them, and you know, there's a lot of good stories in them. But by and large, I think that the stories are fantastical, but they're about what I would expect from you know, a wrestler's heyday.
And he was a bit of a crony to Hulk Hogan.
Well, they talk a lot about that, but no, the Brute, because they always refer to him with an F bomb in it, and we try and keep this for the family,
a little more family.
It was called
Words Brutus, my grandma would say at least
Brutus the Hugging Barber. But there is a story in the middle of it of a very, very, very intense injury he suffered in his recovery.
Oh, where he busted his face up with the hang glider?
Yeah, it all that stuff is mind-blowing.
Yeah, he really jacked his face up bad.
Bruce was pretty kind to him on the Hulk Hogan sycophant front of, like, he was definitely his buddy, but maybe people are a bit harder on him. But listen to all that stuff about that injury, like, I would give him a pass for just about anything. Wow. It's bananas. Like, I don't want to say, you know, if anybody out there listening, Something to Wrestle with Bruce Pritchard, the Brutus the Barber episode is phenomenal.
It's amazing that he still had like a 10-year career after that.
Yeah. It's amazing. I mean, it's amazing that he lived.
Yeah.
At all.
I mean, he became a jobber, but that's better than nothing, I guess, right?
Yeah. But he became a jobber, but like he shouldn't have been doing anything.
Jobber means person that loses.
Yeah. Lanny Poffo.
If
you can remember
fan.
Leaping Lanny Poffo, that's genius. But specifically when he was just Leaping Lanny Poffo, I think that is the definitive jobber. He was just a guy who came in to lose every time.
there's actually a lot of guys like that. What's up, Spencer? You want to jump in again? Okay.
Guest appearance by our buddy Spencer. Spencer, how do you feel about wrestling?
Wrestling?
Yeah.
I'm really not into it that much. Okay. Yeah. Sorry, guys.
That's too bad. We were going to try and wrestle you.
Oh, yeah. Then I'm definitely not into that. You guys are both way bigger than me, so.
Yeah, you got that stay-at-home dad strength.
Yeah.
Just that brutal rage of being at home with toddlers all day.
Yes, yes. All right, see you guys.
Thank you for stopping by.
Are you going up?
I already went up.
Oh, how'd it go?
Good. I wanted to make sure I got up before, because the guy who brought everybody went up, and then I went up like two after him.
Did they all leave?
Just to make sure I got his crowd before they left.
Not me. I'm going to go dead last when everybody's super tired because every single person on the show is going up. I want fatigue.
You're going up tonight?
I want fatigue. It's open mic. Why not?
Oh, hey.
Like I've never bombed in an open mic before.
Maybe I'll go up tonight. No, I'm not going to do that. Just to be clear. I want to get a reaction. There is no way I'm going to do that.
Yeah, I'll probably do a set and see how I'm feeling.
Yeah, cool beans.
Inside baseball.
Sure.
So Something I wanted to talk about. You've been watching Buffy the Vampire Slayer
with
your wife and child.
You know, I got way into Buffy via some friends when it was running.
So you did watch it originally in the
90s? Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, okay. I don't think I was on from the jump. I mean, I've seen all of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember definitely watching the later seasons of that and the later seasons of Angel. And then from that, you know, being on board with Firefly from Jump Street.
I started watching Buffy in season 3. Yeah. So the first 2 years, I didn't
have
watch
you,
it.
Have you watched the first season?
Yeah, I've gone back and watched
it
all of them. Yeah,
rough. Capital R, rough.
There's some good stuff in there, but they were still finding their sea legs.
It's pretty fascinating, considering the juggernaut name that Joss Whedon is now. Looking at that beginning.
That's his pickup line, by the way. Yeah, I'm a juggernaut. Hashtag me too, Joss Whedon.
Come for you, Joss.
You hurt me bad.
How dare you, sir?
I thought you were the good one.
Now, seeing the earliest of Buffy, by today's standards, there's no way that show would have lasted. It's real raw. It's real ramshackle. It's real cheap.
There are elements of Supernatural and a lot of those.
But Supernatural,
Vampire Diaries and things like that.
Yeah, but those things came in the wake of Buffy.
Right.
Things like Supernatural, you know, I haven't ever watched Supernatural. You could probably.
I love Supernatural.
Is it got a good first season?
Actually, the first 5 years are the best.
Well, then, I mean, that's a different animal. Like, lots of shows, there are any number of shows that you can recommend to people, and you'll always say, like, well, the first season's pretty rough. And they'll either tell you just to skip it or stick with it. You need it for the backup. The first season of Buffy is super, super rough.
But it's also only like 12 episodes, 12, 16 episodes, something like that. Supernatural is a little, I mean, not every episode is great, but the story arc that it starts to build, funny little trivia bit about Supernatural, it was originally only supposed to be 5 seasons. So that's why when I say the first five seasons are the best, because those were all planned out to be beginning, middle, end. Yes, it's starting season 14.
Has it overstayed its welcome?
No, because people still love it, and it's obviously getting ratings, or it would have been canceled.
Well, I mean, there are things that are dear to people's hearts that overstay their welcome, and people don't want to see them end. And
it still tells really good stories. I
mean, The Simpsons is still going.
There are a couple seasons where you're like, maybe this is done, but then they come back with something really cool.
Okay.
And the actors love doing it. I think this is the last season.
My memory is real hazy. I remember some pretty specific things about Buffy, and I remember there were seasons where Buffy was not cool with everybody, and those were the seasons that I had a hard time with. That
she was like just season 6 where she's like, after they bring her back.
That's right. That's what it was. Yeah, I think it was a lot of things have that where somebody gets brought back and they're just a kind of, you know, they're kind of a distant prick for the whole season.
Well, if you remember the Once More with Feeling episode, they ask her basically, what is your problem? Why are you like this now?
Is that what, one?
Like
I said, with my...
She says, you brought me back from heaven. I was in heaven. And then the rest of the cast is like, oh. They pulled her out of heaven because they needed her.
Oh no. What the hell? What kind of hee-haw?
You want to come on?
What kind of hee-haw outfit have you set up today?
Yeah, this is
just like barn doors opening. Someone comes in and yells something.
It's laughing.
Who? By the way, who was that?
That was the waitress, Sydney. She's the former cast member that's going to eventually come on.
Is that right?
Yes.
Sydney just, to be clear, if it didn't come through the mics, Sydney just popped in and asked if our dicks were out.
That's because that is a recurring problem for whoever is the waitress for the green room. I'm not going to name names, but it happened very recently.
Oh, that's a bit of deep dive comedy, comedian lore that I didn't want to.
Probably just scratching and things, folks. Perfectly innocent.
There's a
adjusting. It's summer.
Bathroom with a lock across the way.
That is entirely true. It is.
But then again,
four steps away.
The joy of being caught might be part of it. Okay, so what were we? Let's get back.
We're talking about Buffy.
No, we're going to get into a weird bit about the. Oh, you took me back from heaven. Like, but you're gonna. Obviously, you're gonna go back. We need you. You'll go back to heaven, but we need you. Could you not be a dick about it?
Or they could find somebody else. that's kind of what she felt like. Like, it's somebody else's turn. Because the Slayers, when one of them dies, another one becomes a Slayer.
That knife axe thing always looked dumb.
The weapons of Buffy, I always thought, were pretty cool.
Wasn't it like some like legendary weapon? It was an axe with a knife at the hilt?
Probably. I mean, the only real mainstay weapon she ever had was a stake.
That's, you know.
Everything else was just
was that
like,
the name of, she
what does
it
Giles favorite, have in the closet?
Her favorite stake she called Stabby?
Yeah, Stabby.
Yeah.
That's where we use Stabby in our lexicon now.
Generally speaking, I guess that makes some contextual sense. I don't like when the main characters are being pricks. Playing God of War, there is a spoilers for God of War. There's a patch of the game where your son Atreus is being an unbelievable prick. And
as teenagers do.
Yeah. So yeah, but right now that's the impression is just it's you can tell it's made on a budget and everyone. I mean, it's impressive because letting that show go on, everybody really comes into their own. Right now, I feel like Allison Hannigan as Willow and Anthony Stewart Head as Giles are the two people who are actually pretty good actors already.
What season are you in?
Just one.
Oh, you're still season in one. Okay.
We're like, I think, 5 episodes in, maybe?
I've done a Buffy panel at FanX, and one of the things I like to point out is, I mean, it was groundbreaking because, first of all, it was a kick-ass female lead, mm-hmm. which, I mean, I guess you had Wonder Woman in the 70s, but that was kind of dorky and cheesy, you know what I mean? But Buffy was the one that everybody came and hid behind.
Buffy is very dorky and very cheesy.
Right.
Especially, dude, the first season, that's part of it is it kind of evolved. Season one, they're cartoon characters. Particularly, Charisma Carpenter is probably the weakest link. She is... You know, she's supposed to be the mean girl, and she's just a cartoon.
You want to talk? Pixar Pier? You want to talk about Pixar Pier? Okay. You don't want to talk about Pixar Pier?
Not right now. Yes, just but not right now.
2 minutes?
That would be incredible.
Okay. All right, this will all get edited out. It's okay.
Okay.
Oh, so you were talking about Charisma Carpenter.
She, I mean, she's not, at this point, she's not a good actor. And I don't know, arguably, I think she did always feel like a weak link in the show for me. But, like... You know, Sarah Michelle is, she's doing okay. She's having a hard time. Xander Boy, I'm forgetting his name. Xander is,
I can't remember his name.
They're kind of bad actors that are doing okay in a pretty
Nicholas
interesting
Brandon.
Premise. Nicholas Brandon. It's a pretty good premise that, like, pretty much, I think the premise is what it gets by on early on.
It's one of my all-time favorite shows.
Yeah.
And just get through season one. You'll remember. Yeah, you'll remember why you loved it.
About something. I really like Buffy. Season one's pretty rough, and it's impressive to me in that show wouldn't have been given the time to grow and evolve the way it did.
Maybe if it was on Netflix or something like that.
Netflix would have put more of a budget into it.
I'm actually surprised they haven't done some sort of Buffy reboot where it's, you know, have you ever read the season 8 comics?
Yes, I like those a lot.
Where she's training new Slayers and stuff like that.
I will say I don't remember it, but I did own it and I liked it.
Yeah, it was good stuff. I mean, they could tell that story where now she's 40 in the show. She'll probably be, I don't know, 33. And it's just her training new Slayers.
You got it. That's the thing. You got to imagine. I mean, that's the thing. If they can't get more Firefly, which I am against. I'm against more Firefly. I think that the Serenity very much closed the door on that. Like,
also,
the characters that are no. Well, there's age. Certainly,
I mean,
there's age.
A lot of those people were in their 40s when the show was on.
The characters
they're
in
their 50s now.
That were Dunzo in Serenity. Like, it just wouldn't be a great show without the characters.
Is Dunzo in real life, too.
Spoilers for Serenity. Yeah.
Well, no, the actor actually passed away last year. Yeah. Or maybe it was earlier this year.
Bummer, you know, spoilers for people who are alive. Crap.
He was on Barney Miller, everybody. I can't remember his name now.
That was where he was, wasn't
it? He was actually a stand-up comedian to start out. Yeah. He was in a two-man act with Tom Dreesen.
Yeah.
I believe. That's who it was. Yep. True dat.
Wow.
One thing about Buffy that, looking back, that was one of the first shows that had, like, gay characters on it where they weren't like stereotype
and
like
that's boy
Will and Grace type
has you doing panels, I don't know if you know or not, is there any, has, I'm sure he has spoken about it, but you know, has Joss ever said, was Willow meant to have that arc, or was she very much? Because
I've actually never looked into that.
They seem to, early on.
I don't think it was.
Early on, I mean, the first episode's in 1997.
Right.
So, and which, I mean, props more than that. I you know, the 90s was a weird, quote unquote, progressive time for homosexuals in media, in the movies were being made that seemed to say, we believe you're people too, but we only think that you're cartoon people.
Right.
We were seeing movies where gays were in them, or even stories told about them, but they were just always cartoon flamboyants, or in the case of Chasing Amy, telling a problematic story of, well, I liked you enough to turn you straight.
Right. And like we were talking in our last episode about normalizing things or appropriating things, Chasing Amy doesn't age well.
No.
It really doesn't.
He's probably spoken about. Kevin Smith is a guy who made a lot of jokes in his earlier movies that don't.
Right. But for me, that was like a little bit eye-opening, Chasing Amy. Like, I'd never tried to put myself in somebody else's shoes like that. But you're like, oh, okay. I guess lesbians are out there and actually real people with feelings. And they actually, you know what I mean? Where it's not just some person I see on TV or whatever.
Yeah.
Or just some theoretical person somewhere else in the country. It's like, oh, this is a character in a movie that you actually care what happens to her and you care about her feelings.
I think you're right in that. I think movies like that also, I don't think that the themes of the movie changed my ideas, but maybe just the concept of, hey, grew up in Salt Lake, was probably friends with some gay people, but I didn't know they were gay.
I actually remember after watching Chasing Amy, I was looking through some of my old notebooks, because I go through my old comedy notebooks to see, you know, a joke I might have written 4 years ago and forgotten about because I didn't know how to make it work. Sometimes I can make them work now. And I found one that was even like 15 years old, and it was just like ideas. And it was this idea I had to make a movie about these twins, and one of them was a professional wrestler, and one of them was a gay guy. And they were twin brothers, and it was supposed to be serious. It was like, it wasn't maybe a little bit of comedy here and there, but it was supposed to be about their relationship and their admiration for each other and support for each other. And I remember, I was like, why? Oh yeah, it's because that was after I saw Chasing Amy. I wanted to like make something that was like actually important. It affected me enough that I wanted to do that, you know, and I never really wrote much of it, maybe two or three pages. And it was supposed to be a positive thing.
Too late, Travis.
So what I'm saying is, Kevin Smith did a thing that opened my eyes a little bit, where I might have been a little more closed-minded before.
Yeah.
So sometimes, even though it doesn't age well now, it did something.
Have you ever seen the movie Kiss Kiss Bang Bang?
Yeah.
I think that was in the 90s. I'm not super sure on that.
It was like maybe 99, 2000, something like that.
Val Kilmer... That is, I think, one of a best case scenario of he's not a cartoon character.
He's, you don't even know he's gay until like halfway through the movie.
You know,
that's it. He just happens to
be
gay.
He doesn't spend parts of the movie fawning over men and dancing around, you know.
Right.
So that is the best case scenario.
That movie, if you kind of think about it backwards thinking, kind of launched the Marvel Universe, because that was the movie that brought Robert Downey Jr. back. Because he was floundering, folks. If you remember, he was in and out of rehab. He was struggling. And then he was in that, and it was critically acclaimed, and it's a really great movie. There's good action in it. There's great comedy in it. It's a good story. And it kind of put him back on the map, and that's how he got Iron Man. If they had gotten, I don't know, David Schwimmer from Friends to be Iron Man... Would we have the Marvel Universe we have now?
I don't think that David Schwimmer was going to be Iron Man anyway.
Okay, Matt LeBlanc.
There,
Joey.
Matt LeBlanc had his attempt at action movies, and he didn't make it.
You don't want to see Iron Man going, how you doing?
He had a slight Iron Man suit in Lost in Space.
Lost in Space. Have you seen the new Lost in Space on Netflix?
Yeah.
I liked it a lot.
I wish at the end of the movie they just jettisoned Will Robinson.
You didn't like Will?
The cause of all their problems?
Kind of, yeah. It was, I liked it and I liked the acting in it, but there was kind of a feeling like, what's going to happen to him in this episode?
That was one I watched with Gabe, and it's hard to be critical of something that isn't for me. Like it, right. It's kind of for me. Like the relationship between, you know, the mom and dad is very much, you know, I could get into that. It's when you get into like what you're writing a show for young adults or kids mostly. And so when you're writing the Will Robinson character with the robot to appeal to kids.
Right.
And all I'm going is like, why are you letting this kid decide your fate? Why are you letting this kid play with his old? Will Robinson made so many bad choices in that. Like, when he set what's her name free,
Dr. Smith.
When he set Dr. Smith free, I'm like, I can no longer vouch for Will Robinson in any way, shape, or form. I hope that kid dies.
That's what Dr. Smith does. Well, Dr. Smith lies and manipulates and tricks Will, even though Will's a boy genius.
I mean,
that's the whole crux of the character.
I'm being way too hard on Lost in Space, but it's just when it would delve into moments of the. It's supposed to be Will Robinson's moments are for kids of that age, and I can't relate to it. Just the same way that, was it Penny?
Mm-hmm.
Was that her name? Boy yeah. Crazy, like getting into danger because Penny is boy crazy. Is like, man, get out of here with that.
I thought the kids were good actors in it.
Like, why did, okay, in the caves with the crazy monster bats.
That was cool.
Once they got out of that, I would... If I was Will Robinson's dad, I would have broke off a switch and taken him in the ship and said, you are going to have to take everything I give you. Why did you take the thing that makes loud noises in the cave at all? Oh, my gosh.
It's fun. I think it's going to be cool to see where they go.
I'm certainly up for watching more.
We binged them pretty quick.
Yeah, that was a quick one to get.
It was one of those out of the frying pan and into the fire shows. No matter, like, they get out of something and fall into a worse scenario.
There was no breathing room. It was just complete escalation after escalation. Mm-hmm.
Like even the fuel episode.
Yeah.
It was like, okay, this is how we're going to get off the planet. And then that falls through. Okay, this is how we're going to get off the planet. And then that falls through.
Yeah.
It was like, all right, okay. Can we just break this up a little bit?
Yeah. Yeah, that's where I'm at with it. It started to feel comedic the way like something's and that was the funny thing is the whole season did get to the point of where they're lost in space.
I loved that they got Selma Blair and Parker Posey to play sisters because I always thought they looked alike.
Did you?
Yeah,
I don't remember.
So she was
pretty good as Dr. Smith. I don't know if I felt the way that the character was written, but I thought she was.
Dr. Smith good. Always just gave me like the chills, like the heebie-jeebies, no matter who's playing it, even Gary Oldman, the original guy.
It was only a letdown of the two versions of Dr. Smith. I keep wanting to say Dr. Zaius.
Dr. Zaius.
But
that would be a good show too, if they went to the Planet of the Apes, Lost in Space in the Planet of the Apes.
Same premise, instead of Dr. Smith, it's Dr. Zaius. Because in a lot of ways that is similar. No, it's... The two portrayals, the original, I can't remember the guy's name who was the original Dr. Smith.
Oh, I don't know.
But Gary Oldman is just kind of doing a version of, you know, it's a real scene chewing, you know, silly, kind of comedically evil mustache twirling. So Parker Posey isn't really doing that. So it was a little bit of a letdown because I want someone just being goofy.
Yeah, I mean.
So no, I ain't coming for you, Parker Posey. I think you did great. I like it when that character is a goofy, weird, like, you know, reanimate Cesar Romero and let him be Dr. Smith. That's where I'm at.
That's all we need. We just need maybe like a hologram Cesar Romero.
Oh, come to me, Cesar Romero. But yeah, you know, I guess we got a little way from the whole Buffy thing of what was Willow's girlfriend name? Because that's
Tara.
When I first watched
Latin for Earth,
I didn't like Tara.
I don't think anybody liked Tara at the beginning.
She was a bummer.
By the end, though, I liked Tara better than Willow.
I got in like, I wouldn't say heated, but like kind of friendly fights with friends about mean things I'd say about Tara.
Tara was at the beginning was just kind of like
love me.
She was just kind of like damsel in distress almost. She was just kind of there to get into to have something chase her.
Well, she was
because by then Willow used to be that character too.
Well, you'll have to correct my memory on this if it's if I'm wrong. My memory serves me as she played the part of kind of, she was the downer in the same way Buffy was the downer for that season. Of, as the audience, you see, you need to get your shit together to fix the problem. Tara was the same thing of like, she was constantly not being cool with Willow doing this stuff. It's like, Willow needs to be here to fix the problem. Let her fix the problem and then worry about
it. Is that later when she became addicted to magic? Is that what you're talking about? Because that's when I think...
you're getting into stuff I super barely remember. Like, I have these...
That's when I really started to like...
memories.
I really started to like Tara a lot because Willow got addicted to magic and she was the one trying to bring her back.
And out and see how my tastes have changed on Buffy.
I tried to get my daughter to watch Buffy with me. I wanted her to like it so much and she just didn't dig it.
Gabe is really into it from season one, so...
It's too tame for her. That's kind of why I brought up Buffy, because I know you don't like horror at all.
Well, Buffy's not horror.
I know, but it's gateway horror.
It leads into Angel, which Angel is a very pretty boy. Like, I'm going to be predisposed to not like Angel.
Mm-hmm.
But his series, especially when you get to the law firm, I adore that show when it gets to the law firm.
Yeah, the writing got a lot better. At first, it was a little rough, but when I can't remember the actor's name. He was playing the Irish monster guy.
The demon guy?
Doyle. I think it was Doyle.
Man, my memory is super gone. Like I said, I have images.
He was one of Becky's boyfriends on Roseanne. Or maybe husband. I can't remember.
I'm not gonna try to do this because I it's out of my league for trying to remember things. Like, you know, like the my favorite stuff happened at the law firm. The episode where the demon guy was doing something to not get sleep, and he ended up being a big monster because of it. And especially the puppet episode of Angel is one episode of my favorite things ever. Yeah,
for sure. That was a great episode.
So good. So I can't wait to get... I mean, I'm already... You know, I'm super stoked. Gabe is into it already. He loves Xander, cool. As he would. And we're going to get to Spike, and that's where I feel like it's really going to start picking up for me.
You like Spike better? I didn't like Spike with Buffy, but I liked Spike.
Well, I mean, it's harder to take Spike with Buffy because it gets into the same Debbie Downer-y. Their relationship was always based on kind of mopiness.
Right. And going back to Tara.
Mopey Spike, because spoilers for Buffy. Spike ending up in Angel was the best thing because he didn't have He didn't have to be mopey anymore. He could just be that character that you like.
Yeah.
And also him and Angel hate each other. So
the
one
that hung out with Drusilla. Yeah.
Right now we're just trucking with the master again on the low budget. Like everybody, boy, what is that? There's an old Saturday Night Live sketch, and I think it was Christian Slater, and it was supposed to be a wolf. He was turning into a wolf. It was a Wolfman thing. But the thing I always remember for it that was my friend Corey and I was a big thing between us is there's a part where he'd keep going off camera and like, oh, I'm changing, and he'd come back with another piece of Wolfman on him. But the best one was he came back and was like, oh, and he had like vampire teeth and he goes, oh, I turned into a werewolf. It's hard to talk with wolf teeth. And he'd go back off camera. He took out like, yeah, the wolf teeth went away. It was too much. But the master and any of the season one vampires are all kind of talking like this.
Yeah, they kind of do that throughout. They've got
heavy makeup and these bad teeth on them.
Yeah, the chosen one's a little disturbing. The little kid, he kind of gets annoying too.
We just finished that episode.
Yeah, go ahead. I don't like kids dying on shows, but go ahead. Oh yeah, that's what it was.
It's the been anointed. So again, like my memory is pretty trash for that stuff, and so a lot of this, it feels like I'm watching it again for the first time. Mm. But I remember kind of trace things.
I think I'm interested to see how you feel about Tara this time around.
Yeah, I will be very interested to get through that because I had a different take. And again, I have a predisposition for people being mopey when they need to get things done.
I think once it became evident that there was something between Tara and Willow, I think a lot of people were uncomfortable with that for obvious reasons because it was the 90s and that was something that hadn't been on TV. A lot of people were, though.
I mean, that was during an era where I was not as involved as I am now. So I'm not prepared to say that wasn't some of it.
And also, I think people thought she was going to be like the Yoko that was going to break up the group.
Yeah.
Because people wanted.
I think that's probably more of where my disdain for her.
People wanted Willow to end up with Xander. When it's all said and done, they're going to end up together, right?
That's what the show, I mean, from watching it from season one, that's what they built, that's what they're building is.
Right, and I think that's originally what they wanted to do.
They're very much building that, at least that Willow has a crush on Xander.
I kind of feel, going back and watching, obviously, Willow had a crush on Xander. Going back and watching it, I felt like Cordelia was there just to be a mean girl originally.
Yeah.
And I think as they went along, they thought, well, there's something here. Maybe bring her into the group. And then they needed a way to make her likable.
I don't think that's the case.
Had Xander go with her.
I don't think that's the case because Charisma Carpenter is a part of the main cast. So they,
yeah,
you know, they weren't just going to have her be a mean girl. She feels like, early on, she feels like a cameo character, like the principal, like any number of people who mm-hmm. are people who are always in it, but they only show up once in a while. But Charisma Carpenter is, when they run the credits, she's part of the main cast. So I have to assume they always knew they were going to do something with her.
By the way, Charisma Carpenter, when she has like a slave outfit in Angel, nice.
Once that comes up, I'll let you know.
It was Slave Leia all over again.
No, but, and Willow sort, and I guess that's depending on what good old Joss's vision is. Her sort of making plays at Xander wouldn't necessarily mean that the vision for her wasn't that she was a gay character, because it could very much be, well, she's the sort of traditional of like, she didn't really, she felt like she's supposed to go for someone, and her and Xander are really good friends, so she may not have those kind of feelings toward him, but they're really good friends, so maybe that feels like, you know, just like she might be trying to make her sort of awkward plays at Xander just because she feels like she can't be this thing that she is, so she needs to find someone that she can be with.
I feel like I would have to watch all of the director's cuts of every episode, which I have on DVD, but I don't really want to go back and watch. I wonder if I could
go back and listen to Joss Whedon go on and on.
I don't know. Maybe we can hit him up on Twitter.
Yeah. Hey, Josh, you out there?
Something else I wanted to talk about. Our buddy Shaq.
Yeah.
Shaquille O'Neal. He's going to be opening a new restaurant in Las Vegas. Oh. I want it to be a very nice place, high class, great service, but when they bring the plate to your table, they miss and hit the ground.
Did I tell you about, I looked into his Shaquille O'Neal Shaq Fu return of something or other?
The game?
Yeah.
Was it like a sequel to the first one?
It was a crowdfunded.
Oh, wow.
A crowdfunded thing. It's not a good game.
So is it recent?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. This just barely came out.
Oh, wow.
I watched a quick look on it, and it's a bad game, but it's also, much a lot of the like Long Duck Dong type stuff we've talked about. Mm-hmm. That game is just rife with
a lot of
a lot of like Ching Chong type voice characters in it.
Oh, great.
Yeah, it's not. Shit. It's got that, and I think he makes some. I think he makes some references of. I think there's a point where he makes references of character maybe being gay in a derogatory way. It's not good.
Well, Shaq can only say one syllable words, so we know what that word was.
No, it's just not. It's not an aged well attitude in the game.
Oh, Shaq!
But that's our buddy Shaq, and I. Where'd you say he's
in Vegas? He wants to have a big old restaurant in a casino, I guess.
Those things always fail.
I guess it's a rite of passage.
Yeah.
Maybe he thought, everybody else has done it, I need to do it.
Shaquille's long in the tooth for making a rite of passage, but it's just, you know. Maybe. I guess he's got a lot of his fingers in a lot of pies. I don't think Shaquille O'Neal, I think he can take that gamble, and if it doesn't work out, he's got plenty of young.
Yeah, he's got plenty of money.
Commentator, he's. I would be curious. I don't know how much money he's getting on the back end of those movies he'd been in.
Probably not very much.
I think that there is a. I think there is a weird nostalgia for like Kazam. Kazam specifically, I think people remember fondly in a way that it maybe doesn't deserve. So maybe he gets money out of that. I
remember getting angry watching that movie. It was so dumb. I saw it in the drive-in with something else. But when food started falling from the sky, I was like, I'm out. I can't. This is stupid. I can't take it.
But I think I know a lot of people younger than us who remember Kazam fondly. There's a lot of movies that I remember fondly that are super trash, you know.
That's true.
I've come for Goonies before. Goonies is garbage and people remember it so fondly.
I still love it. It's better than you're letting on.
I've watched it in somewhat recent history. It's a pretty bad movie.
The Goonies, if we didn't have Goonies, we wouldn't have Stranger Things.
I don't know if that makes it.
The Stranger Things kids are kind of like Goonies Revised.
Okay, you know what?
And if there was real, like a real danger.
Stranger Things cribs from a lot of things. Goonies is maybe one of them.
But I think that's very heavily influenced. That's why they brought Sean Astin in for season two.
Sean Astin is...
Bob.
Sean Astin is a treasure.
Okay? He is a treasure.
Sean Astin acquits himself. He shares the load, so to speak.
One thing I like about Stranger Things is they don't have like the creepy adult. Like in the very first episode of season one,
creepy.
Okay, I'm talking like predatory adult.
Yeah.
Like in the very first episode, you see Eleven walk into that diner and there's just this dude working there.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh crap, where's this going to go? I'm not going to like this show. And it didn't go there. And I was like, oh, it's good. And I thought Bob was going to be that. It not necessarily like in a sexual abuse way, but I thought
Bob was going to be a bad
guy. I thought he was going to have a dark side.
Yeah.
And it was going to come out and he was going to scream at him or hit him or something.
He was
and Bob he didn't.
Was great. Sean Astin was one of the better parts of season two.
I love that the adults are at least have redeeming qualities.
Yeah.
Hopper.
Yeah.
You root for Hopper.
Hop's gonna be Hellboy.
I know.
Hellboy is one of my favorite things.
Me too.
And the two movies that Guillermo del Toro did are visually good. They cast them well. They're not great tellings of that. They're not great portrayals of that character.
I want to say it's Hellboy 2, where he's like getting drugged by a subway and he's trying to get onto the subway and there's like an old lady hitting him with a cane and he just goes, I'm on your side.
You know, and that speaks to that character. The guy who did Hellboy, Mike Mignola, kind of, we might have even talked about this already. The guy who did it, Mike Mignola, has talked about how he modeled Hellboy. I mean, Hellboy started in the 90s, the comics. He modeled it after his dad that was just a working class Joe. And the way that character is written is very much of he does treat it like a job. And he doesn't like who he is.
Right.
You know, he's wrapped up in a lot of this prophecy and stuff, and he doesn't want to deal with it. He just wants to do his job.
Right.
And the movies touch on that a little bit, but mostly the movies touch on this idea of like he's kind of a bratty teenager who just wants to be famous. And it's not what I like. It's not what I like about it. And the Hop being what I've heard about the series that they're working on making, you know, hopefully they can push it more toward that.
Should be good.
A lot of the stuff I've heard, they're like, we're going to make it adult. Like it doesn't really need to be adult.
I don't think so. Hellboy was PG-13.
I mean, it's,
my kids loved it.
Yeah. I mean, it's not bad. I like it. I like the version of the character where he is just this guy who kind of has the weight of things on him and just wants to work.
I don't understand that we need to make it rated R.
Yeah.
Like the Birds of Prey movie that's going to come out. It's going to have Margot Robbie. I think she's might be directing it or producing. I don't know. She's got a hand in it, but why does that need to be rated R?
It's the DCU stuff, Warner Brothers, they took the route of wanting to make their stuff gritty, and it doesn't do it any service. Superman sucks.
The best parts of the Justice League movie is the lighthearted stuff.
You know, Edgelord Jared Leto Joker is just a train wreck.
Yeah, it looked like Jim Carrey if he had a opiate addiction.
Did you see Suicide Squad?
Oh yeah,
it is one of the worst things I've ever seen. It's just a mess.
There's a lot in there that I liked, actually.
Really?
Especially Harley Quinn.
Yeah.
And I'm not even objectifying. I liked the character. Liked the devil may care attitude.
You know, I don't know that I can necessarily get on you about that. It's you know, it's interesting to see that character's origins is just kind of a throwaway-ish thing in Batman the Animated Series that it rose to.
Oh, I know.
Where the Harley Quinn character is now.
A lot of people don't know that's where it started.
Yeah.
She was a henchwoman.
Batman the Animated Series is what led us to more Star Wars movies. Mark Hamill wasn't doing so well until he
killed it as the Joker.
It's one of the in my mind, it's just as big as him being Luke Skywalker that he, you know, you say like Heath Ledger, that's the thing. People define that role in a weird way. Jack Nicholson defined that role. Heath Ledger defined that role. My boy Cesar Romero defined that role. But Mark Hamill, probably more than anyone, is the definition of the Joker.
The attitude.
Yeah, the attitude, the voice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's...
And he's proud that he did it.
Should be.
I saw him when he came to Fan X.
And the thing is,
he did that panel at the
you see anything,
where the Jazz play.
You see anything animated where he does a voice in it? 9 times out of 10, he's doing just a slight variation of that Joker voice. I think when he's in The Flash. He's in The Flash. He's kind of doing the Joker voice in that, isn't he?
Yeah, he was kind of playing the Joker, really. I mean, it was like the character Toy Master was or something like that. Yeah, it was the Toy Master. But it was basically him playing the Joker.
But he does the voice, too.
Yeah.
The only thing I've seen him where he does that voice, he's in the first Kingsman movie. He's a British professor.
Right. So. He was out of place in that movie, in my opinion. It was
if you
weird.
Can recognize him, you probably wouldn't care. Like, if you haven't seen Mark Hamill in a while, or this was before the new Star Wars, like, you probably wouldn't necessarily recognize him. You like Kingsman?
Yeah.
That's
I haven't
movie.
Seen the second one.
I have access to the second movie, and I'm kind of, because I really like that first movie. And
that scene where Colin Firth goes into the church.
Yes. Freebird.
That is so
intense.
Good.
It is so good and intense. And I think it's one take.
I don't know about that. Is it? That's even more impressive.
I really think it's one take. I might be wrong on that. But
if that's the only thing that lasts for 100 years from that movie, that's classic filmmaking.
To the solo, to the big, like, the big part in Freebird.
Right.
Yeah. It's super violent, like violent violence that earns it.
Right.
That's what you say when you hear, that's what we were kind of originally getting to, is when you hear, we're going to make it rated R this time, it feels like they're trying to make it something that it doesn't need to be.
Right.
That part specifically in Kingsman, like that violence is, you know, it speaks to what's going on in that scene, you know.
Oh, for sure. That tells the story.
Like, he puts a guy in a headlock and just this flamethrower lighter in his face.
Everything's a weapon in a church.
And seeing some of the early stuff, the early trailery stuff for Kingsman, and finding out Colin Firth's character was alive still, so excited. And then it kind of came and went, and I didn't even hear people say it was bad. I just didn't hear that anybody saw it.
Yeah, I think it did okay, but yeah, I didn't go see it.
So I've got access to it.
I think I saw it on DVD. So that's probably how I'll see this other one, apparently.
I guess, just DC stuff is a train wreck. They're trying to do the wrong things with everything. Suicide Squad was them trying to kind of do a Guardians thing.
Right.
And the Joker stuff is just... The Joker stuff doesn't need to be there, and it's bad.
I didn't mind it so much when he was in the tuxedo for some reason. Like, when he was in the tuxedo, I was like, okay, now I see the Joker.
Are you okay with, like, hey, I need you to jump into a vat of melted pudding to show me that you love me?
Yeah, that was weird.
Or that you're devoted to me? Hey, guy in the club, I want you to make out with my girlfriend, and I'm going to kill you because you're reluctant for some reason? But that's bad. And then they went back after the first trailer of that, they went back to try and make it more like the trailer, and it just became like your dad's summer playlist, the movie.
Right. Yeah, there's parts in there that I liked, but it definitely kind of missed the boat a little bit.
You know, you were saying how much you love Wonder Woman. It's definitely better than most DC stock, but I'm just kind of okay with it.
Really?
Yeah, for me, I feel like it strays really close to being strays really close to Captain America territory. I mean, just in a lot of ways, telling close to that story. And then also, the villain sucks in Wonder Woman. David Thewlis, I believe.
Yeah,
he's a great actor, but that's.
I like the twist that you thought it was the other guy the whole time, though.
I knew it wasn't that. They played it so hard that I knew it wasn't that guy. But I think the greatest fall is when he does the fingers over the thing. Is it still David Thewlis with that cheesy little mustache?
Oh yeah,
it's so unintimidating. And even like when they show the flashback stuff where he's being cast down, it's still David Thewlis with the cheesy mustache with like muscles and stuff. And it's like
that scene where they're walking through the trench, and there's that battle, and they've been stuck there forever. Like that was the thing about World War One, is you would fight for a month and gain like 3 feet. So. And she's like, we need to get out there and help these people. And they're like, we can't do it. And she just walks out there.
Yeah.
And just bang,
it's a
bang,
good scene.
Knocking bullets
good
around. It's one of the best sequences
ever in a
superhero
movie. When they go ham in that city with everyone. Like, there are good scenes in it. Just like, from a story perspective, it just didn't do a ton for me.
To me, that scene is up there with the original Avengers, where they go character to character, all in one shot, where they're all fighting the, what are they called?
Those were the...
T'Chulus or something.
No, the
what are they called?
Chitauri.
Chitauri.
Yeah, it was the Chitauri.
But that's an amazing scene too. But the Wonder Woman scene is right up there with, in my opinion. That's why I loved it.
Sure.
And it was a it was a great casting.
Yeah, Margot Robbie,
Gal Gadot.
Gal Gadot.
The only thing I had ever seen her in was Fast and the Furious, and she was a minor character in that.
Boy, I wouldn't even have remembered her from that.
But she's a heck of an actress. I'm looking forward to Wonder Woman 2.
Fast and the Furious movies, superhero movies.
I think they need to build a universe around her. She needs to be the Iron Man of the DC universe.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think they are a little bit. I feel like in Justice League that they pushed her into a little bit more of a leadership. Like, there wasn't really a leader in.
No, there wasn't.
In Justice League. Again, I go the rounds. Justice League's super terrible.
I didn't hate it.
Man, Travis.
What is wrong with me? I seem to like everything.
It's another one where, like, the villain. First of all, I will never take a villain named Steppenwolf seriously.
He's a minor villain too. That's a. I mean, it's going to lead up to Darkseid, of course.
It's going to lead up to DC Thanos.
Yeah, although DC Thanos.
I think Thanos is supposed to be. Historically, Thanos was a play on Darkseid.
Oh yeah, Darkseid was way bigger in the DC universe, I think, than Thanos was in the Marvel universe.
So, yeah, it's also, I think, I've pronounced it as Thanos for so many years, and I can't. It's a GIF thing where I can't get myself to call him Thanos.
My son is helping me edit these, and he keeps saying WAV files, and I'm like, I'm pretty sure it's WAVE. No, it's WAV. No, I'm pretty sure it's WAVE. I'm sticking with WAVE. WAVE files.
I'll join you on that night. Again, like it is GIF. Do not bring GIF to my door.
GIF is a peanut butter.
Yeah, it's what choosy moms choose.
All right. Well, we should probably be wrapping this one up.
Yeah. We got in the distance.
Yep. We had some cameos.
Yeah. Cameo.
We had a couple cameos.
Boy. Yeah. Yeah. This was a hee haw episode.
We got Charlie Chaplin and
it was
Audrey Hepburn behind us.
By the way, you can't really hear it on here, but right now, Travis and I, this whole episode, we have been climbing a building where you can clearly see that it's just we're on the ground, but the camera is tilted. We're climbing, and celebrities pop their heads out of windows and ask us if our dicks are out.
And Cesar Romero's chasing us. It's a Batman and Robin joke, everybody.
Cesar Romero wouldn't have to chase hard. I'd just stop. Let's hang out, Cesar.
What are you doing for lunch, Caesar?
You look great, Caesar.
Buy you a Caesar salad.
Mm-hmm. Well, all right. Hey, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for listening, if you're listening.
Party. Again, I always forget this. You got anything you want to plug?
Yes, I do. I want to plug this podcast. I was on an episode of Kevin Farley's podcast. I think it's called Kevin Farley on the Road. Yeah, you can. That's Chris Farley's brother. So maybe he'll post it. I don't know. We'll see. Look it up.
Didn't you say you were on with a few people?
With my buddy Tim, who's a comic in town too, Tim Thorne. Okay. And also headlining Wise Guys Ogden, August 17th and 18th. This weekend I'll be with Pablo Francisco, but that'll be over by the time you hear this.
Oh, you're opening for Pablo?
Yeah.
Nice.
And I've got some FanX panels that are in consideration to be on the actual show.
Do we have a minute for you to talk about what your panels are in consideration?
The ones that I suggested that are in consideration is there's a Jurassic Park 25th anniversary panel. There's one that I named Avengers Reassembled, and it's basically about how the original Avengers are still alive. How are they going to put their differences aside and come back together and reassemble? There's one about the Avatar movies. The James Cameron Avatar movies, and
there's only one of those, Travis.
But they're developing new ones.
I know.
And it was 10 years ago. Is it too late for that? And then I had
It was too late for that after the first movie was made.
Right. And then I've got one that's called A Who's Who of Doctor Who.
Okay.
And it's because the property's been around for 50 years. There's so many aliens and doctors and companions that it's kind of intimidating for somebody new to jump into.
I know that's one of I've talked to you about how there are things I want to. Doctor Who is something I would love to have watched Doctor Who. Trying to watch it's even if I just start from. I mean, I've watched a bunch of it, but I've forgotten it all. So to start over, even from the it's not a reboot, just from when it started again.
The Christopher Eccleston. Yeah, it was a reboot. I'll say it's a reboot.
No, I mean, it's a continuation. It goes with that timeline. Other doctors are in it,
Well, originally there was only supposed to be 11 doctors?
Yeah, I mean, that, from
now,
what I understand,
now there's there an infinite amount of
doctors. From what I understand, there was an original thing, but, you know, like they fixed it.
And now it's a lady doctor, and people freak out about that.
Have they started that?
Yeah, they've already done a season. I haven't seen it yet because I watch it on Amazon Prime.
I haven't really heard hide nor hair of that, so I was curious.
Yeah, it happened last year.
Has it been well received, or depending on if you're what kind of person you are?
Depending on what kind of person you are. Well. So I haven't seen them yet because, like I said, I watch them on Amazon Prime and they haven't showed up on there yet.
But
I will watch them.
You're going to talk about how it's intimidating to get into?
Yeah, and the plan is to have like a laptop with pictures of everybody, and the panel can talk about this character and why you should love this character and get into Doctor Who because this character does this or this storyline.
Okay.
It'll just kind of break down some of the, you know, the Daleks and the Cybermen and all that stuff. Angels. So it's just kind of supposed to be an entry point for that kind of stuff. My favorite, the panel I'm most proud of that I ever proposed was titled "As Guardians of the Galaxy, What Do We Know About Thor Ragnarok?" And it was before Thor Ragnarok came out, just based on that one trailer. But that was my favorite title, "As Guardians of the Galaxy."
That's cool. Well, I hope you.
It should be fun though. It'll be fun.
Be looking forward.
Get some FanX tickets. Come see me there. Come say hi.
I'm gonna find some way to ride your fame into doing some of that stuff. So.
Yeah, eventually that.
I'm coming for you, Travis Tate's FanX connections.
You know, there's so many people that are doing panels just because they started a podcast. Probably half the people there.
Yeah.
So it's definitely a way to get in.
Well, good on us then. Catch Travis doing that. If you want to catch me between watching episodes of Buffy, you might catch me watching episodes of FLCL by myself, because that's an anime that's a little horny and I probably should feel embarrassed about it. So, for Late to the Party, I am Jake and...
I am Travis, and I'm about to go bomb at open mic and better Tate than never.
Later, people.